that combination with learning about syndication made me think, well, I can really build a business around this to, you know, help people that I know that would like to get into real estate investing, but don't want to do the heavy lifting of looking for deals and raising money and managing properties and all those things.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Passive Income MBA, Investing in Real Estate Syndications. Today, I'm so happy to have my friend Todd Sulzinger on. Todd, thanks for being on.
Oh, Suja, it's great to be here with you.
Awesome. Well, everybody, Todd is a former Silicon Valley finance executive turned real estate investor with a focus on the growing niche of mobile home park investing. His company, Blue Elm Investments, has built the expertise to turn neglected mobile home parks into vibrant communities, increasing the availability of safe, clean, and affordable housing for their residents, while offering their investors a strategic way to diversify their portfolios. Todd is also co-author of Success Habits of Super Achievers, a number one Amazon bestseller with secrets, tips, and inspiration to accelerate your success. Todd, so great to have you on. Why don't you take us back in time and give the listeners a little bit of color, a brief overview of where you started in the real estate space, why you started, and how you got to where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I kind of took a typical path that many of us take, just going to school, getting a degree, finding a W-2 job. And I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. So after I graduated from San Jose State, I started working for a networking hardware company with these, you know, super cheap stock options with this dream of, oh, this company is going to go public and I'm going to make millions. And that does happen for some people in Silicon Valley, but so much of it is luck and timing. And I ended up working for a couple different companies, some that went public, a few of them that were absolute can't misses that ended up either, you know, being acquired or just going out of business and, you know, layoffs, restructuring, and just, you know, a lot of things just create a lot of uncertainty from a professional standpoint. So I, you know, worked for, you know, quite a few good Silicon Valley companies over a 20 plus year period. And during that time, though, I started to research real estate. I, you know, met a few people that were investing in real estate. And that was just totally outside anything that I had ever thought of before. I started listening to a lot of podcasts and educated myself about real estate, and also went down a path that I think a lot of early real estate investors do, is I started buying single family homes. And I went to the Dallas-Fort Worth market first and started buying some single family homes there with this idea of, oh, if I had enough single family homes, the income from those could replace my W-2 income. And, you know, after a time, I realized that was going to be pretty difficult to do. And, you know, for every home you buy, I'd have to come up with $25,000, $30,000 down. And it would take a long time to build up a big enough portfolio to really replace that income. And it was also around that time, after I bought those houses, that I learned about real estate syndication. And I went to the Real Estate Guy's Secrets of Successful Syndication seminar, actually the first time back in 2015, you know, with this idea that I could combine my corporate finance experience with my passion for real estate and help investors invest passively. And after that, I didn't do anything about it. You know, life got in the way, work was really busy, and didn't take action, actually jump in and start to work on syndications. I went back to that event back in 2018 and decided, okay, if I'm going to dive into this, like, it's going to be now or never. So at that point in time, I cut back at my W-2 job to 4 days a week. So I was able to focus a day a week just looking at syndications, looking at deals, talking to brokers, talking to investors, and started my company, Blue Elm Investments, to put together syndications.
Awesome. Yeah, that's quite the journey, you know, what you went through in Silicon Valley and then deciding to switch to real estate, what would you say that sort of major attracting factors were, like from the viewpoint of working in Silicon Valley to real estate?
Well, there's a lot of, you know, great things about, you know, being, you know, being able to work in Silicon Valley, work with some, you know, good companies, you know, worked with a lot of great people, got to travel all over the world. So it's definitely those benefits for sure, you know, and having a steady paycheck, things like that, that come back, you know, the comforts of having a W-2 job. The downsides to it were that in a finance role and kind of those administrative roles, you know, I was different companies that were either bought by bigger companies that didn't need to finance HR IT departments. I was asked to relocate at one point in time. I was working for a great company and they shifted where all their finance staff was going to be located. And I, at that point in time, didn't want to relocate. I'd been at other companies. I mentioned some of the ones before that was a can't miss IPO that just ended up, you know, downsizing and going out of business. So, you know, over time, I just felt less and less comfortable with, you know, not having control of my own destiny, being in those roles. And I had looked into other ways maybe to, you know, get outside of corporate finance. I looked at, you know, different kinds of franchises and other businesses. And just over time, I just, you know, I was just kind of pulled in the direction of real estate just because its historical ability to build people's wealth over time, the ability to borrow money, just like so many things about all the benefits of real estate that drew me to that. And then kind of that combination with learning about syndication made me think, well, I can really build a business around this to, you know, help people that I know that would like to get into real estate investing, but don't want to do the heavy lifting of looking for deals and raising money and managing properties and all those things.
Awesome. Okay. So Todd, I know you're a mobile home park expert. Why don't you share with the listeners some of the things you love about this asset class?
Yeah. Mobile home parks are really interesting. They're still kind of a niche investment. They're growing a lot because more and more people are getting into that space now as some of the other asset classes like single family homes and apartments, cap rates are starting to compress and prices are increasing. And I had been following mobile home parks with a few different operators that I knew and listening to a lot of podcasts. And I just, the things that drew me to it were some of the things that like recession resistancy. They're historically resistant to recessions in that there's typically always need for affordable housing, even if there's, you know, in a typical recessionary environment where people might move from A-class apartments down to B-class and then down to C-class. If they, you know, have a decreased income over time, there's typically really, you know, a strength in the affordable housing space. And also mobile home parks were interesting because it's the only asset class that there's a fewer number of mobile home parks across the country every year. There's rarely new mobile home parks being built just due to zoning and kind of a not in my backyard feeling in a lot of communities, but they're oftentimes redeveloped for better use. So where there's always more homes and apartments being built, the number of mobile home parks in the country are always decreasing. So that was attractive. There's often opportunities for value add because a lot of the parks are owned by people that have owned them for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, don't have the, you know, maybe professionalism or expertise to really run the mobile home park as efficiently as they can, or may not have had the resource over time to invest in fixing up vacant homes, infilling vacant lots, or doing other improvements to the park. So there can be a lot of opportunities in the mobile home park business to, you know, go in and find a park, invest resources in the most effective way and make it a better place for people to live and give a good return to investors.
Yeah. Why don't you dive? I want to touch on something a little more, which is how these places can become nicer places to live for the people that are there. How have you seen that play out in your experience with mobile home parks?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Like I had mentioned, a lot of times the owners just don't have the resources or the desire to really make their park nicer. I mean, it's not uncommon to find a park that is in okay shape, but might only be 50% occupied. And I know when I, on my mobile home park consulting business side, when I talk to potential clients about looking at parks that are for sale, they'll say, well, like, how could a park, you know, get to this state and be neglected and only get down to 50% occupancy? But then when you look at the ownership, it's a lot of times they might be aging owners that have owned the park for a long time. So if you've got somebody who's 60, 65, 70, or even older, who's had the park for a long time, park might be paid for, so that, you know, there's no debt on the property. You know, they might not have the energy or the wherewithal to, you know, either from their current resources or to take out additional debt on the property to, you can like rehab the existing homes, maybe fix the roads, clean up the park, bring in new homes to fill vacant lots. So they might be sitting there thinking, okay, this 50% occupied property gets me the income I need. I'm fine here, but they don't have the resource to really clean the park up. So we've gone into parks and, you know, done things like, you know, fix the roads, just done a lot of general cleanup from a landscaping and maintenance standpoint. Some of the parks that we have, we own the homes themselves versus the tenants owning the homes. And they lean more towards the ones that the park owns. So sometimes with those, you've just got to go in, paint them, clean them up. A lot of times the skirting may have been damaged, so you can, you know, replace the skirting on the homes. So there's kind of some like general like beautification that you can do that oftentimes with someone who's owned the park for a long time, again, they just don't have the resources or the energy to go and do those kind of turnarounds.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's such an important consideration when doing mobile home park investing, is knowing that you can actually take a place that's maybe doesn't have as a homey of a feel and improve the operations and turn it into a place that's like a much more enjoyable place for people to live, work, and play. And so great work.
Yeah. And you do see that from a rent standpoint as well. Like we go into some parks where the rents might be pretty far below market. And a lot of it's because the rest of the park isn't attractive. So sometimes a value add play is to actually go in and do some of that cleanup, make the park look nicer in general, because if there's a vacant home that's disrepair or is dirty and hasn't been painted or cleaned up in a long time, somebody's not going to want to move into the house next to it. So some of it, so you can kind of clean up a lot of the houses, even if they're vacant as you're in the process of remodeling those, it just makes the park more attractive and can command higher rents for those new residents that want to come live there.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us about, Todd, your first mobile home park deal. How did you put it together? How did you find it? Tell us that story.
Sure. Yeah. I was, you know, looking for deals for quite a long time, probably at least 9 months, looking on some of the typical things like Crexie and LoopNet, but I was also making direct contacts with other mobile home park brokers or other commercial brokers that had listings for parks. So just made a lot of phone calls, looked at a lot of different markets, trying to find parks. And there was somebody that I was working with at the time, and we were going to come together and we were just going to go ahead and try to find a park together and buy it ourselves. During that process, I found these two parks in Georgia. They're about 71 spaces, about a mile from each other. You know, a smaller market, but a strong market from a rental standpoint and kind of good economic diversity. And during that process, the partner I was working with found out that his equity partners weren't going to be able to bring in as much money to the deal as they thought. So I kind of immediately had to pivot and go out to the rest of my investor list that I've been talking to and try to pull together the deal myself. So I kind of went from initially thinking I was going to do just a partnership with somebody to going out and raising from a bigger group of limited partner investors to close on the parks.
Awesome. Yeah, I bet that was an exciting ride. How did it go?
Well, it's kind of funny when you're raising money to put deals together. I think it often happens that you kind of think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get there. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to raise enough to, I went to this one point of like over raising by about 20%. So I kind of went from, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to get there to, oh my gosh, I've got too many investors. I have to tell a few people they weren't going to be able to invest in the deal. So overall, it was successful because we were able to close on the park.
Awesome. And how is it going running that park?
It's been good. It's been a great experience. We closed on the park at the end of 2019. So the timing wasn't ideal because we kind of ran right into COVID. And when I was looking for mobile home parks to buy, I was looking for parks that were in landlord-friendly states. you know, just I think that's, you know, the safer places to invest in terms of being able to evict tenants who aren't paying. And the initial parks I bought were in Georgia. When COVID hit, the eviction moratorium was put into place. That kind of tied our hands in terms of being able to evict people. So there were a few people in our parks that were affected by COVID from a job loss standpoint. There were a handful of others that just took advantage of the situation, knowing they couldn't be evicted and decided not to pay. And so that's probably been our biggest struggle with the operations at that park, is just not being able to evict people who are taking advantage of the eviction moratoriums.
Mm-hmm. What strategies have you had to employ to deal with that?
The kind of biggest thing we've done to try to mitigate those costs related to that was there was a few government agencies that came out and said they would work with landlords and tenants to help people. So there was one in Georgia in particular that we started down the path of working with them to work with our tenants to be able to collect some of that back rent. So that's been, you know, one kind of the main thing we've done to try to mitigate some of that cost. You know, other than that, you're really stuck. I mean, if you have a tenant that, whether they're being honest about it or not, if they said that their job's been affected by COVID, can't be evicted. So we're just trying to stay on top of local and federal eviction rules just to, you know, make sure we can, you know, follow everything we need to follow and try to get people out if they're enough, they're not paying.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hopefully that will change over the next, you know, several months. And yeah, good luck to you on that park. So you're a mobile home park consultant as well. What kinds of things do you look for when you're, and do you tell your clients to look for when you're looking to buy a mobile home park?
Well, it really kind of starts with what the client's looking for, because in the mobile home park business, maybe different than in apartments, there can be such a variety from a size and stability and return standpoint. We've got, you know, parks that I've helped people buy that are as low as $300,000 up to $3 or $4 million. And within those parks, some of those might be have, you know, low occupancy versus, you know, a nearly full park. So it's really working with each client to try to figure out, you know, how much money do they want to invest kind of upfront and then over time to stabilize and turn around the park. And then find out what if they're comfortable with parks that have park-owned homes or tenant-owned homes or some mix of the two. And then looking at each individual market and just trying to really work to match, you know, a park that kind of meets their investment goals.
Okay. And are you usually working with individual investors in this capacity or groups of investors?
It really runs the gamut. Yeah, I've worked with, you know, individuals, small partnerships, other larger mobile home park operators who are looking to expand their portfolios. So in the consulting role, a lot of people, a big variety of people call into the office that, yeah, runs the gamut from, you know, family offices, hedge funds, mobile home park operators, or just individuals looking to get into the business.
Awesome. All right. So before we hop off, I want to ask you what advice would you have to someone who's interested in getting into the mobile home park niche?
Well, I guess my advice would be decide if you want to get in passively or I guess actively through direct ownership. You know, passively is the easiest, you know, in the syndications I put together, you know, the limited partner investors, you know, don't have to worry about any kind of anything from an operations standpoint. If somebody wanted to get more active in the business and had more funds they wanted to allocate to those, the consulting company I work for also takes care of turnarounds and property management. So it's probably as active as someone might be if they owned a single family home, but they had a property manager running it. You still have to make decisions about, you know, how to spend money and allocate resources and make decisions about the park. So it really depends kind of from a diversification standpoint, if they wanted to, you know, dive in and get some guidance and buy a park directly, or if they were really just interested more from a passive standpoint.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Todd, it was really great. We learned a ton about mobile home parks and your journey from being a Silicon Valley finance executive into real estate. Very interesting stuff. Tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you and anything else you'd like to share.
Sure. Yeah. My company is called Blue Elm Investments. So my email is Todd, T-O-D-D at Blue Elm Investments. Yeah. I'd be happy to talk anytime. I love talking real estate and mobile home park business. So feel free to reach out.
Awesome. All right, Todd, we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Tuja.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me.
Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.